Good to be with you guys in God's house today. There's no Bills game, so we can just hang out here all afternoon, right? Oh, that got a better reaction than I thought it would. No, don't worry. We'll get out of here at the normal time. But last week, Pastor Josh started our new sermon series on Wonder of Christmas. And this week, Pastor Jeff asked if I would continue it, so thanks to Josh and the worship team for covering that so that I could focus on speaking to you today. And by the way, it's really nice to be out there where I can hear your voices, because when I'm up here with the earbuds in, I can't really hear you guys. So to be out there with you and hear you was really a blessing to me today. Each week in this series, we're going to be looking at a different character in the Christmas story and how they were awakened to the awe and wonder. But before we get into our character for today, I have a little fun thing for us. This is kind of a little trivia thing. I'm going to give you facts, trivia facts about a book that you've all heard of, you're all familiar with, and if you feel like you know what book I'm talking about, I wonder if you raise your hand. I'm not going to call on you. Don't say it out loud. Just, I'm curious, by the time I'm done listing all the trivia facts, I'm curious to see how many hands are up, see how many people think they know what book I'm talking about. And then at the end of that, I'll give you a chance to tell me what book you think it is, okay? This book was written almost 200 years ago by a young man in England. It took him 6 weeks to write it, from mid-October till the end of November. He worked feverishly because he wanted his book to be published in time for Christmas. Because his previous books hadn't sold that well, his publisher didn't want to publish this book. So the author paid out of pocket for the publishing of 6,000 copies. This book hit the shops on December 17th, 1843, sold out in 3 days. Two more editions had to be printed before New Year's Day. By February, the story had already been adapted for the theater. By March, there were 8 competing versions of the story playing London stages. A couple hands are starting to go up. The author was a bit of an actor himself, so in the years that followed, he himself began traveling around, giving public dramatic readings from his book. His first reading drew a crowd of 2,000 people. He went to perform a total of 127 public readings. In 1867, he did a reading tour of the U.S. People camped out in the snow to get a ticket in a line that stretched out for a mile to hear this guy read. He was a rock star. Since its initial publication, this book has been issued in numerous hardback, paperback editions, translated into several languages, has never been out of print. This book has sold over 2 million copies in the U.S. alone. There have been over 400 movie and TV versions of this book. No other author has ever had their work adapted that much. Anyone want to tell me what they think it is? I heard a couple of people say it, yes. A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. The story of Scrooge, right? We all know the story of Scrooge. Hard-hearted, old man, bah humbug, hates Christmas. Visited by three spirits Christmas Eve, and by Christmas Day, his heart has changed. His sense of awe and wonder is restored. Like I said, there was so many movie and TV versions of this, it's maybe kind of hard to pick just one clip from one of them. But I did pick a quick one-minute clip from one version that I always remembered, and that's when Patrick Stewart played Ebenezer Scrooge. This is the morning of Christmas, when he wakes up and realizes he's got a second chance, and you can start to see the awe and wonder take over his heart. Let's watch it.
Jacob, heaven and Christmas time be praised. Still here. They're not torn down, rings and all. They're here. I'm here. The shadows of the things that would have been can be dispelled. They will be. I know they will. I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything.
I think we all love to see that rebirth of the childlike awe and wonder in him at that moment. And, you know, I think we kind of hate the guy when the story starts, right? Because he's so mean and nasty. But as the story unfolds, we find out, you know, that his mom died in childbirth. We start to have a little sympathy for him. Never had a mom. We find out that his dad rejected him because he felt like, you killed my wife, you know. And so he never really had a dad around for him either. So we start to get sympathy for him. And there's that moment in the story where we find out he did have a shot at love. There was a woman who loved him, wanted to get married, and he said no, and he ended up going into a life of business and money. And, you know, we hate to see that decision. No, don't do that, Scrooge. This is your chance. But yet we know and kind of can understand, you know, he was never really loved before. He didn't really know how to handle that. And we can kind of understand he wasn't really taken care of before. So, yeah, I can understand why he would focus on trying to just take care of himself, make sure I make enough money to live well. And so we can kind of understand, sympathize with him, and by the end, you know, we're rooting for him, and we're happy when he gets restored in the end. And I think we can all relate to the story, because really, it's kind of our story. I think all of us have suffered different hurts and wounds over the years and have struggled to keep our hearts open and long for that kind of restoration of that childlike awe and wonder. I want you to keep Scrooge's story in mind as we move into our Bible character today, because there's really some similarities between Scrooge and Zechariah in the Bible. I'll show you what I mean here. If you want to turn to Luke chapter 1, I'm going to read a few verses here, starting at verse 5. In the time of King Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly, but they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. So Zechariah's story is different than Scrooge's story, obviously, but one of the similarities is I think Zechariah struggled with that hard-heartedness because of specifically the wounded emotions he had from not being able to have kids. I mean, we can read through the story and not really think about it, but if you really put yourself in his place and you imagine yourself a young guy getting married, newlywed, and you plan your life out, and we're going to have a picket fence, and we're going to have three kids, and they're going to be named Jimmy, Johnny, and Joey, or whatever, and you just... They get happy and excited about their new life together. And, you know, a year goes by, and it's like, you know, we didn't get pregnant yet. You know, another year goes by, they start praying, Lord, what's going on? They start praying, God, give us a miracle. We want a son, you know. And 3 years, 4 years go by, no answer. God says nothing. A decade goes by. You can start to see how their hearts would maybe have some issues with the Lord after a while. Disappointed with God. This is not really what I expected. You know, I thought he would bless us. Why aren't you blessing us, Lord? And you can imagine that they would really struggle. And I think by the time they got to this point in the story where they are too old to conceive children, I think his heart was pretty hard at that moment. Obviously, he's still a priest. He's still serving in the priesthood. He didn't turn his back on God in that sense. But I think his service at this point is probably pretty joyless. I can imagine that he's doing it kind of out of duty. It's the right thing to do, but I don't know. What didn't have a good personal relationship with God at that point? This is just me speculating, but that's what I imagine when I think of him. I think he was a little more like Scrooge than we would at first realize. He was a priest, so he knew the scriptures. He knew the Old Testament inside and out, and you know, there's tons of references to God being faithful. We sang about it this morning. And one of them, just one of the many, Psalm 119, verse 90, your faithfulness endures to all generations. And I can imagine Zechariah knowing these scriptures, saying, yeah, what about my generation? What about the generation that's supposed to come after me? Where's your faithfulness, Lord? I can really imagine him wrestling with the Lord in his heart, wrestling with doubts, disappointment with God. Yet he continued to serve. Continuing in verse 8, it says, once when Zechariah's division was on duty, he was serving as a priest before God. He was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. And when Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Obviously, if you go in a room and you don't think anyone's in there, and all of a sudden you see somebody, you're startled, right? So there is that factor. But it says he was startled and gripped with fear. And notice the angel doesn't say, oh, sorry to startle you there, buddy. Didn't mean to scare you. The angel goes right to the heart of Zechariah's fear. He says, don't be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Zechariah's fear for the last however many decades had been that God wasn't listening to his prayers. God hadn't heard his prayers. God wasn't going to be faithful. God wasn't going to come through for him. I think that was the heart of his fear at this moment. And the angel spoke to that directly. Zechariah was afraid that God had let him down. Moving on in verse 13, the angel says, your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you're to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. And he goes on to talk about the ministry of John the Baptist that will follow. But I want you to notice this, verse 14. He told Zechariah to have a son who would be a joy and delight. And this word in the Greek, this word delight, means wild, exuberant, extreme joy. So that's Scrooge jumping up and down, you know? It's like, but Zechariah's response in verse 18 is very Scrooge-like. And, you know, you probably remember in the Christmas Carol, yeah, Scrooge is kind of scared at the spirits who come, but he's kind of just hard-hearted about it. Like, yeah, this is probably a rotten potato that I ate, you know, that's making me see visions here. Like, he was like still bah humbug when he was talking to the spirits. Zechariah is here in the presence of an angel, and I think he's kind of still like, yeah, I've had decades of God saying nothing. I'll believe it when I see it, you know? And I don't think it's hitting him that God has been silent for 400 years, and the first person he chose to speak to was Zechariah. I don't think that hit him at that moment. I don't think that word wild, extreme, exuberant joy hit him at that moment either. Or the amazing ministry of John the Baptist that's prophesied to him by the angel. I don't think he can take all that in. I think his heart's too hard at that moment. You know, so he just has that kind of, yeah, I'm old. How's that going to happen? You know, prove it. I believe it when I see it. Bah, humbug. And I love the angel's response, and I kind of maybe put my own spin on it when I read it, but I'm kind of like, dude, I'm Gabriel. I'm an angel. God's been silent 400 years. I came from the very presence of God. No excitement? No good reaction here? This is good news. No, you're going to be silent, and you're not going to be able to speak till this happens because you didn't believe. Gabriel was waiting for centuries and millennia to come to earth and start to proclaim this stuff. And the first guy he talks to is, yeah, right. Okay. You're not going to be able to talk. Don't say anything more till you're ready to say something good. Moving on in Luke 1, skipping down to verse 57, when John the Baptist is born, it says, when it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown her great mercy, and they shared her joy. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him after his father Zechariah, but his mother spoke up and said, no, he's to be called John. They said to her, there's no one among your relatives who has that name, and they made signs to his father to find out what he would like to name the child. He asked for a writing tablet, and to everyone's astonishment, he wrote, his name is John. Immediately, his mouth was opened, and his tongue set free, kind of like on the video. Wild excitement, joy! Began to speak, praising God. All the neighbors were filled with awe. Throughout the hill country of Judea, people were talking about these things. Everyone who heard this wondered about it, asking, what then is this child going to be? There's the awe, and there's the wonder. And I want to say something about this word used here for awe. It's really interesting. It's the Greek word phobos, and we get our word phobia from there, like, I've got claustrophobia. I'm afraid of being in an enclosed space. I'm claustrophobic. Phobos. Phobos is fear. But it can also be used for wow, awe, and wonder. And throughout the Christmas story, you'll see it used one way for a positive wow, and then another moment, they'll use the same word for fear not. This is the word the angel said to Zechariah at the beginning. Phobos not, you know, don't be afraid, don't phobos, God heard your prayers. But now everyone's in phobos, and it's a good thing. It's the other kind of phobos. It's kind of like us saying, I love you to your wife, and then also saying, oh man, I love this hamburger. It's like two different uses of the word, hopefully. Hopefully there's a difference there. But it's interesting, this word can go both ways, and I really feel like when I tried to wrap my mind around it, I really felt like God made us, designed us to be filled with awe and wonder for him. But if God is not filling us, fear will fill us. I feel like we either live in awe and wonder or live in fear. I feel like that's our choice. I know fear is rampant in our culture, especially since COVID, and you got cancel culture, and you got inflation and government stuff, and everyone's afraid. But could it be partly because our culture has pushed God off to the side and made him so small? There's no awe, reverence, wonder, honor, fear of God. If you have the fear of God, you don't have any other fear. And I know I don't love the word fear of God because it sounds like you're scared that he's a monster who's going to kill you or something. And it's kind of true. If you're not in right relationship with him, you should be scared. But if through Christ you have a good relationship with God restored, the fear factor becomes an awe and wonder factor. Like, wow, he could have killed me, but he saved me by grace. And if the more you magnify him, glorify him, make him big in your thoughts, make him big in your life every day, the less room there is for fear. And I found this verse in Exodus 20:20, which says it. Do not be afraid. This is Moses talking to the people. God has come to test you so that the fear of God will be with you to keep you from sinning. When I found this verse, I was like, do not be afraid. Fear God. That's weird. Don't be afraid. Be afraid. Don't be afraid. Fear God. And isn't it interesting that this is Exodus 20:20? We should have used this verse in 2020. We needed this. God has come to test you to see if you fear him or not instead of fearing all the other stuff. This is powerful stuff. I think this will show up probably in the weeks to come a little bit more, but I wanted to mention it to you today. Moving on into Luke 1, verse 68. This is when Zechariah erupts in praise to God and finally can speak. That's called the Song of Zechariah. I don't know if he actually sang this or not. But, you know, there's probably some versions of Scrooge where he jumps up into song and dance at that moment, you know, when he wakes up on Christmas morning. Probably gets going with a Broadway tune or something, some versions. But Zechariah is either singing or just shouting and declaring out these praises to God in Luke 1, starting at verse 68. Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, because he has come to save his people and redeem them. He has raised up a horn of salvation for us in the house of his servant David, as he said through his holy prophets of long ago. Salvation from our enemies and from the hand of all who hate us, to show mercy to our ancestors and to remember his holy covenant, the oath he swore to our father Abraham, to rescue us from the hand of our enemies, to enable us to serve him without fear in holiness and righteousness before him all our days. And he goes on to say more and more about the ministry specifically of John the Baptist and what's going to happen in the years to come. But a couple things I want to point out here in verse 72. He says to remember his holy covenant. God remembers. You know, Zechariah's name means God remembers. And you know, he had lived decades thinking God had forgotten about him, didn't he? Wasn't going to answer his prayers. Wasn't going to hear him. Wasn't going to come through. Wasn't going to be faithful. And here he declares with that loud, praising voice, he remembered. God is faithful to his promises, is what he's saying here. And another interesting thing he says in this song, verse 74, he says, now we can serve God without fear. Ah, phobos. Same word. Without fear. Without phobos. You can guess what he means. Without fear, they're all in awe and wonder. They're all in phobos, that kind of awe and wonder, that kind of fear. So he's not saying, stop it. Stop being in awe. He's saying, now that we're in awe and wonder, now we can serve him without that other kind of fear that he's going to let us down and not come through for us and not answer our prayers. So that's cool. Now I want to start to we know we talked about Scrooge, we talked about Zechariah, but now I want to talk about us and try to apply this to us. Zechariah learned when he thought God was not faithful, he learned in the end that God was faithful. God came through for him. God did not let him down in the end. And I think we need to really get this. Because there's a big pitfall that I know I've fallen in before, and probably a lot of you have, that can just totally shipwreck our faith. A misunderstanding of what the Bible means when it says God is faithful. God being faithful does not mean he will spare us from suffering. Let's put that on the screen. God being faithful does not mean he will spare us from suffering. Zechariah suffered. He and his wife suffered year after year of unanswered prayer, year after year of broken dreams, broken hopes, wondering, where are you, God? Why aren't you coming through for us? What's going on here? God let him go through that suffering. But in the end, Zechariah is saying, God remembered, he's faithful. Think of Jesus. God the Father allowed his beloved son to be arrested, tortured, beaten, mocked, nailed to a cross, die a slow death of suffocation. What suffering? That is the worst suffering anyone's ever gone through that I know of. God allowed all that. But in the end, God is faithful to take all that suffering and turn it into victory for all of us. And Jesus knew that, and that's why he could entrust himself to the Father. Even in that moment of suffering, he knew that God would be faithful somehow, even though he felt completely forsaken. So if God being faithful does not mean he will spare us from suffering, then I can also say God being faithful does mean he will be there for us in and through suffering. And you can put that on the screen also. God being faithful does mean he will be with us in and through suffering. Quick little story, you know, as a kid, I know you'd be surprised by this, but normal boy. Riding bikes, skateboards, playing football, street hockey, whatever, with the kids in the neighborhood. There was often times when I would come home banged up, needing my mom to wash up the scraped knee and put a bandage on it or whatever. And I remember one particular moment when I came in the house. I think maybe I wrecked on my bike or something. I was probably 6 years old or something like that. And I couldn't find my mom. For some reason, she wasn't there that day. And I saw that my dad was there. Now, not super close to my dad at that time in my life. He was very quiet and worked a lot. I didn't feel like I saw him much, connect with him much. I saw my dad there, and I was like, maybe this guy can help me. So he did. He washed me up, put the salve on the wounds, put the bandages on, and I felt like he was there for me. That's cool. He was faithful. But it never occurred to me to blame him that I fell off my bike. Like, why weren't you there when I was out there on my bike? Why didn't you run alongside my bike and stop me from falling? Like, it never entered my mind. It's like, that's just the way it is. Riding a bike, I'll fall. I'll get banged up. That's life. But he was there for me. That's just a simple example of faithfulness. He didn't stop it from happening, but he was there for me when it did happen. Fast forward a few years later, I'm 12 years old. I don't have time to tell you the whole story, but a real traumatic incident happened, really devastated me emotionally for many years. It wasn't something I could talk to anybody about. I just had to shove it down. You know that technique works great. Just shove it down. Keep going. Somehow I got through high school and got invited to come to church here, got recommended to go to Bible school. And by the end of Bible school, God was starting to talk to me, saying, you remember that thing that happened when you were 12 years old? You should start thinking about that again. And I'm like, no, that wasn't really anything. I'm done with it. No. Just start thinking about it. So I'm working part-time here at church, leading worship on Sundays, driving back and forth to Houghton at that time, getting a music degree. There were some drives on the way to Houghton when that thing started coming up. like a ball in a swimming pool that you can't hold under, whoop, and it pops up like Scrooge there with a some of those buried hurts were coming up, and some of the drives there, I remember blaming God. I was listening to a worship tape, like, what songs are we going to do for worship this Sunday? La-da-da. Came right up, right in that. Hate this music. Hate this praise music. And I hate you, God. I remember saying that one day to him. I was shocked that no lightning bolt hit. I just kept driving, and I was like, uh-oh. I'm like, people are calling me pastor, and I just told God I hate him. This is not good. I'm in trouble. He was very patient with me. He knew what happened when I was 12. He knew how I felt. He knew that I needed to process those emotions and talk through it with him. And there was lots of blame. There was lots of anger. It took me years. I should have seen a counselor, but I didn't. So I don't recommend that. You just go see somebody. Get help. I didn't get help. That's why it took me this long. But why did I blame him for that? I didn't blame my dad for falling off my bike. Why did I blame God for an emotional wound? It's like, we do that. Thankfully, now I can look back and I can say, if that incident hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here today. That completely changed the trajectory of my entire life and propelled me into my destiny. That event caused me to seek God. That event caused music to start coming into my life. It's like, when I look back at it, it's like, thank you, God, that you let that happen. You know, as parents, we don't want our kids to suffer. We don't like that. We don't like to watch that. It's actually harder for us to watch them do that than for us to just take care of it ourselves for them. But we have to let them sometimes go through things. We have to watch them struggle sometimes because we know it's going to be something that they learn and grow from. There's other times when we can say, no, I'll spare you that. I'm not going to let you go through that. But this one, yeah, I think that would be good for you. That's our Father in heaven is looking at this stuff and saying, I will let you go through that because I know it's going to be good. There's a verse that I found in 1 Peter 4. He's talking about going through difficult things. And in 1 Peter 4, verse 19, he says, those who suffer according to God's will should commit themselves to their faithful Creator and continue to do good. There's several things in this verse. First of all, our suffering can be in God's will. It can be part of God's will for us to go through something. Another thing, when we're going through something like that, there's other kinds of suffering, by the way, that you bring on yourself that's stupid, and you shouldn't have done that. It's your fault. Or someone does to you or whatever. But there are certain things in life that God allows you to go through for your growth and stuff. The second point, in suffering, we should entrust ourselves to God's faithfulness in the midst of it. Like, I don't know why you're letting this happen right now, Lord. I don't like this. I'm angry at you. I'm blaming you. I'm in your face right now, but you said you're faithful, so prove it, you know? That's one way of expressing it. It's not just like going to look like happy necessarily, but entrusting yourself to his faithfulness. I'm holding you to your faithfulness right now because it don't look good right now. I need you, Lord. Come through for me. That kind of entrusting yourself. And also the third thing in that verse, it says that we should continue to do good. Now, thankfully, somehow, by God's grace, when I was driving back and forth to Houghton dealing with this stuff, not talking to anybody about it, but, you know, somehow I kept coming to church. Somehow I felt like quitting lots of times, but I didn't. I kept coming. So thankfully, he was able to, I guess, keep me in the right place through that. And Zechariah did that too. You know, he could have turned his back on God. You're not going to give me a son. You're not going to come through for me. You're not going to answer my prayers. Okay, well, I'm not praying anymore then. I'm not serving you anymore. I'm not going to being temple this week, quitting the priesthood. I'll go sell leather belts by the road like some other Middle Eastern dude. Zechariah didn't give up. He stayed faithful even when it didn't look like God was going to be faithful to him. So that's what we're encouraged to do. In suffering, entrust yourself to God's faithfulness and continue to do good. Just stick with it, because he will come through. He will prove himself to you. I wonder if the worship team could come up here as I get ready to bring this to a close today. We've talked about God's faithfulness, but really the awe and wonder of God's faithfulness is the final thing I want to bring out today. I talked about trying to be faithful even when it looks like he's not going to be faithful. But I want you to see the wonder, the true awe and wonder of his faithfulness is found in 2 Timothy 2:13. It says, "If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself." So even though we're encouraged to stay faithful, when it looks like he's not going to be faithful, we're encouraged to stay faithful. In the end, it doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, that'll be a better place to be. You know, Zechariah wouldn't have been in the temple to hear the angel if he hadn't stayed in, stuck with it. But when it comes really down to it, even if we're faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. Even if Zechariah had walked away from God completely, maybe the angel would have come after him and met him in a cave somewhere, I don't know. He cannot deny himself. You know, that means if you have a truck, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and find it turned into a Volkswagen Beetle. It's not going to happen. It's a truck. It's going to be a truck tomorrow. God is faithful. That's who he is. That's what he is. He's not going to all of a sudden not be faithful. That's just who he is. Buffalo Bills are a football team. You're not going to see him playing the Phoenix Suns tomorrow night on the court. That's stupid. They'd lose really bad. They're a football team. They're going to play on the turf. That's where you'll find them. God is faithful. He's not going to change. Whenever it looks like he's not faithful, just wait. He's going to be faithful. I asked the team to come up because I think we should stand and sing a portion of that song we ended worship with. I put my, what is it, faith in Jesus, trust, hope,
faith.
Faith. I put my faith in Jesus. Great is thy faithfulness. I put my faith in his faithfulness. I just wonder if we could declare that one last time before we pray in closing today.
Put my faith in Jesus, the anchor to the ground, my hope and firm foundation. He'll never let me down. And I put my faith in Jesus, the anchor to the ground, my hope and firm foundation. He'll never let me down. Well, I put my faith in Jesus, my anchor to the ground, my hope and firm foundation. He'll never let me down. I put my faith in Jesus, the anchor to the ground, my hope and firm foundation. He'll never let me down. And I put my faith in Jesus.
Faithless, you will remain faithful because you cannot be anything but faithful. You can't not be faithful. Thank you for that, Lord. And today we just want to declare your faithfulness over all our lives, Lord, over all our situations, Lord. There's people here who are dealing with hurts like we've talked about today. Maybe disappointments with you, times when they thought you let them down. Maybe right now they think you're not coming through for them, not going to come through for them. We declare your faithfulness, Lord, over those lives, over those hearts, over those struggles, over those situations. Lord, we declare your faithfulness today. You are faithful. You can't not be faithful. You are faithful in every situation. You will be faithful in every generation. You will prove yourself faithful, Lord. We declare that today. You will prove yourself faithful in every situation. We declare it today, Lord. Even to those who feel like they've been faithless, turned their back on you, given up on you, swore in your face, you are still faithful. You will pursue them. You will prove it to them. To see your faithfulness, Lord. And for all of us, Lord, who do go through times of difficulty, Lord, help us hang on to your faithfulness during whatever difficulties we're going through, Lord. Help us do what that verse says, Lord, and trust ourselves to a faithful Creator and continue to do good. Continue to do good. And I exhort you today, just continue to be faithful. Continue to trust him. Continue to trust your situations to him. Continue to trust your heart, your emotions, your hurts to him. Continue to trust him. Trust in his faithfulness. Continue to follow him. Serve him. Continue to do good. He is good, and he will prove his faithfulness to you in your situations. If anyone wants more prayer today, there'll be someone up front to pray afterwards. The rest of you have a great day, and may you experience the wonder, the awe and wonder of his great faithfulness in your lives.